Hey everyone, my name is Maya and I am based in Auckland. I'm an artist and a writer and sometimes organize events and things like that. But I'm from South Island and yeah, I'm the writer and director of this performance.
My name is Freddie and I grew up on Ohope Beach on the east coast from Tuhoe and Ngā Tiawa. I'm really lucky to be one of the performers in this piece. I do kind of, it's more like intuitive dance, I reckon. I had no real training, but I've done a lot of work with a hula hoop and do some kind of circus aerial acrobatic stuff, so.
Cool.
Nice to meet you. I guess the first thing to say would be, starting from the writing point of view, I mean, it's a play now, but it started as a script. Where was the inspiration for this story?
So I wrote it as a script just because I'd been reading lots of plays, and you can read them in like an hour. And yeah, you can just smash them out. And I liked how easy they were to read. Like, they're just conversational, and I really like that oral aspect of them. And then I decided that I would go back down to my marae in Christchurch and like meet with lots of my family I haven't met, or like have like conversations with my nana and my mum about like, I don't know, just intergenerational ideas and transmission of knowledge. But then when I actually went down there, I kind of like realized it wasn't what I expected, and I wasn't going to have that homecoming feeling, and maybe I needed to write to that more. So I still had conversations with my mum and my nana and like different people around the marae, but it just took on a different edge, and I guess it became like a script that was put online for Window Gallery, and then now it's come into a performance.
We'll come back to that shifting of the story into different platforms, but you just said you didn't, or you expected a different kind of homecoming. Do you want to just talk a bit more about that? Did you have, what was it that didn't meet your expectation?
Well, I guess because I've always lived like quite, I guess, urban, for lack of a better word. And I only really went to my marae as a child, but I guess when you think about, I don't know, like typical Māori locations, it's like, yeah, your marae is like your home, it's where you go back to. And I kind of thought I'd go back and feel like this great sense of belonging, and it would answer lots of questions for me. But I went back and it just realized that was never gonna happen, or like that would happen with time and like with other things than just going to a location. Like, it's more of an internal journey or something you do with others than just going to a place. But it's weird because, like, whenever you write down your, like, pepeha or, like, a bio and you put your iwi, it's like you put in your marae and it's, that's supposed to be where you hail from, but it, you go back and it's just different than what you expect.
It's always about a place, and so that expectation is fed to you, right, over time. And then you're looking for something, but it's not there straight away, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
There's so much I want to unpack. Honestly, this is me going through all of the things. And I read the script and it's beautiful and heavy, and you're touching on very real experiences, and also you've got academic references in there. I was just wondering, what is it specifically that you are trying to communicate, excuse me, in terms of that script? Is it this particular issue about homecoming, or is it, because there's a lot of, I mean, I'm going all over the place here, because there's a lot of themes that you cover and it's touching on so much. What is it that you were trying to speak to?
I guess I was trying to speak to Indigenous identity as a whole. So it kind of, I wanted to touch on like the sense of self that we might have, and how that's affected through different things like colonization, and then like connectedness to land, connectedness to a language, and connectedness to others, and a lot of alienation that we might feel. But I also wanted to just talk about the shared kind of like spirit, or like the shared experiences, and how that's passed down intergenerationally. And I guess because like in my family it's only really like the women who are Māori, it's always like women marrying Pākehā men, and so I feel like a lot of connectedness to the women, and yeah, it feels like there's a line and like a shared identity that passes through that. And I wanted to kind of blur that to talk about how important that whakapapa and heritage is to Indigenous people, especially when they're trying to, like, deal with alienation. Yeah.
I wrote down a number of words or phrases that came up as I was reading, and one of them was matriarch. So I think that was really cool that you put that in there. Is that specific to your whānau?
Yeah, my nana is definitely the matriarch, and her nana and the nana before that was all matriarchs, yeah. And I feel like that happens a lot with Māori women, like, they always kind of are the ones that are taking care of everyone or taking over the household. Yeah, that seems pretty, like, a big thing.
So in terms of what you're speaking to, who is it that you are trying to speak to? Are you trying to voice something that you've gone through that may relate to other people going through something similar?
Yeah, I think so. I think I like to imagine when I'm writing that I'm always writing to someone in a similar situation to myself, or, like, writing to people quite close to me, like writing to my mum or writing to, like, people, yeah, close to me. But then it's funny because, like, when you put it out into a platform, it's often not those people that it gets to, which can be kind of hard. And then people who I'm just like, that's not for you, will kind of respond to it and say they loved it, and you're like, that's great, but it has nothing to do with you. So yeah,
I want to come back to that. I think that's really important. I've sort of jumped way into the kind of meat of the issues and themes that come up, so I will come back again to that, but let's maybe just take it back and let's talk about actually what the play is about. What's the sort of synopsis, or what's the set of events and the storyline?
So the play, it's not really a play. I've been calling it a reading, but it's loosely tells the story of a character, Girlie, who actually is multiple characters. But then it sort of digresses and goes into just, like, almost like skits or, like, small scenes that are quite comedic, and just tearing it all down. So it's just sort of like short snippets that then form a wider narrative of this Girlie character. Yeah.
Do you want to add anything?
Yeah.
So, like you say, it's not really a play, it's more of a reading, and you're dealing with multiple characters. What does it mean to you to play those characters?
Well, I feel like it's really easy to relate for me to a lot of what Maya says, and the play is really for, you know, people who identify as Māori and have this kind of underlying Pākehā blood as well, which is always beautiful. And so for me, it's been a huge, like, learning and being able to share all of these ideas that, you know, you have these kind of conversations in your head, but you can't kind of build them any further. So for me, the play is, it's been huge just about understanding, you know, who I am and all of these ideas about identity. Yeah, my role, because Girlie has all these multiple identities, there's no firm characters, and I kind of play a variety of people, obviously. Do a lot of movement, which is fun as well, because there's these beautiful myths that also tie into the script as you read.
Yeah, I think Freddie goes from playing, like, Girlie, who's, like, in a meatpacking factory, to playing, like, Waitaiki, who's Tamahua's bride that was stolen from Taupō and taken down to the South Island. So she plays, like, a couple. Who else do you play?
Also play an auntie for a little bit. And then play a person who's coming back to their marae for the first time in a long time. Someone who knows their pepeha well but still has those kind of questions. Is she saying it right, you know? And then, yeah, return to playing Tamahua's bride, who was, yeah, stolen by a taniwha.
It's the complexities of stories. Yeah. But it's really important, right? Because there is no linear, and that was another word I picked up, actually, the Western linear lines of trajectory, which you're sort of challenging, even in the format of the reading. What are you hoping people get out of that? In terms of trying to follow these different stories and piece them together as one, but also have them on their own?
I guess in terms of not following any kind of, like, linear narrative or trying to talk about myth or story as part of our actual whakapapa and questioning that linear history, I just kind of want people to feel maybe a bit relaxed, and because I feel like lots of people know that and they talk about that, but it feels like it's maybe, like, I don't know, like, false or just something kind of, like, superstitious maybe. And I kind of just want people to relax into that and to stop feeling like they have to put themselves into something that doesn't quite fit or something that doesn't speak true to their experience. Yeah. But I'm also helping people speak to it, and maybe if they don't agree or like want to add something or inflect something, like always happens, I'm hoping that'll come up and it's kind of a prompt.
Mm.
Yeah.
You're wanting to open discussion.
Yeah. I mean, lots of shows have like a post-show forum. We haven't organized that, but I'm hoping like that'll open that up with people, even if it's not organized by us. Yeah.
I did, you're dealing with lots of different themes and words. Like, it started for me to write down words that jumped out for me, things like whakamā, grand narratives or truth, survival tactics and assimilation, once we're warriors came up, groundedness to a place, the mattress room, things like, so mattress, you know, things like that are something that you may only understand when you've gone through that or when you've been part of that context. But Once We're Warriors is something that probably a lot of people understand, and that scene did also jump out for me when the boy is telling her that he thinks she's so beautiful, and then she's like Nabol, and then next day it's like he takes it as a personal offense and then wants to like hurt her by using this sort of narrative. Do you want to talk more to that?
Yeah, so they're chatting on MSN kind of thing, eh? And the boy's saying how much he really likes the girl, and the girl takes it as a compliment, but no more. They see each other in class the next day, and he uses the Once Were Warriors study to kind of take a stab at her and get some kind of revenge for her not wanting to go out with him, which is pretty powerful, eh? And
fucked, yeah, on so many levels.
Definitely. Yeah.
But probably something that happens quite often. You think it's such a normal interaction probably between people in terms of...
Yeah.
But to have... It's like he has that power, right? There's a sort of also a power thing going... Anyway, that's how I read into it. Whakamā was another one. So you're dealing with the shame of not knowing who you are, basically. And me, personally, we understand that that's not your shame to bear, right? To understand the process of colonization and all of those things, you know this is not your fault, but you're still the one that has to carry it, right?
Yeah, I'm like, oh, wait, do we know that?
Well, though, some people don't know that.
Yeah.
How do we deal with that?
We did a huge workshop on shame, and it was pretty powerful, and I think really emotive for everybody involved. There is shame. Like in that scene with boy and girly, it was really shame for her. And
yeah, I guess it's hard because shame is like often so ingrained, especially in older generations, and it's like it's a survival tactic to then be shy about things, and it's really difficult because it's, I don't know, it's almost like you have to go against maybe what they would do to then try and undo some things, which feels counterintuitive, or like maybe it's being disrespectful in a way. But yeah, it's really hard because then that comes down into new generations. And there's a scene where we kind of, like, parallel that shame about, like, having language beaten out of you in school and then not knowing the language and feeling like you don't then deserve a place in your own family because it's been beaten out of generations before you.
Mm.
And, yeah, I don't know how we undo it.
But, yeah, okay, so the next thing I did want to touch on was language, because there's sort of quite a strong thing in there about where she talks about, I'm not Māori because I don't have the language, which is a big debate even now, I think, right? There's lots of people who claim, yeah, you don't have your Māori tanga if you don't have your language, which isn't true. I mean, the language is incredibly important, obviously, and the language is the thing that connects you to Te Ao Māori.
Mm.
But yeah, what are you trying to say? Where are you going with that?
So yeah, we have this scene where Girly obviously doesn't know the language, and she's talking with her mum and saying how she doesn't feel like she fits in with the family or fits in with being Māori in general, because she can't speak it, and how there's all this expectation that if you are Māori, you have to speak te reo, but she can't. And yeah, I guess we just want to communicate that anxiety or that alienation around that, because, like, I understand it opens up a whole nother part of being Māori if you can speak te reo, and it, the language is so inherent to tikanga and the way that we function, but it's been, like, beaten out of generations and generations, so just give us a second to catch up, because we'll get there, and everyone wants to get there, everyone would want to speak it if they could, but it just takes a while. Yeah, I guess that's what we're trying to say. Yeah. But then we also get quite comical on it. There's one scene where we're sort of like breaking down words really simply for the audience that maybe would not know them.
Yeah.
And we have these little taniwha puppets, I think they're going to be, that are explaining the words for everyone, while also talking about the intense, like, cultural erasure and intergenerational erasure that's been caused by people not being able to then transmit language to their children. Yeah. And having to relearn language, your own language, in a university setting.
I like you. You should give us a sec.
Yeah.
Yeah. Taiwa. But I just also curious, and sort of outside of the play, but because you know how people talk about the loss of language, and my mum always talks about, actually it was never lost, you know, it didn't just disappear, it was systematically removed, and people recognizing that and then recognizing the need to, or the effort and the energy that needs to be put into rectifying that, right, is, yeah, we need time. Back to the reading, how did you go about shifting it into something that was played on in life? What was the process of moving it from the script to the reading and including, are you the only performer?
One of three.
Right.
I guess I can start, and then maybe Freddie can explain a bit more about the rehearsal processes that we have. But basically we have the script in a rough version, and we sort of read it through a few times, and then we allocated like a few weeks in rehearsals just to like breaking down each scene and what it means, and then prompting it maybe into something else, or just creating it into some kind of a scene to be performed. But yeah, it was all devised by me and the tuakana that we have, Fetu, and the three performers. So it's sort of been recreated into something new that's a collaboration between all of us. Yeah.
So we get to meet up and have these workshops where we discuss all of this, and we kind of draw from the words. There's a lot of kind of playing and offers of different options for performance and which words we can use. Really lucky, is there 10 or 12 of us involved?
Yeah, that's probably like 12.
Yeah, probably 12, maybe even more contributors. So it's a really cool project that can just morph. Like at the beginning of the workshop process, we had no idea what it would look like, obviously. Knew some of the words that would be used, but it's been really cool seeing it develop. Every time it changes loads, and we're always getting so much from it, or me especially. I find it, being around all of these people who can articulate all of these ideas that I've had at the back of my mind, you know, it's really, really special and really healing. So it's, yeah,
that's a good word, healing. And I mean, it's such an intimate process, it sounds like you've made it quite a personal, just even the making of this very personal and intimate story. So yeah, I suppose leading back to the audiences that you talked about, you are speaking to specific people, and yeah, how does it make you feel when there's people that, you know, can, that come along and don't really understand it? What is it that this is supposed to be? It's not for them, right? Essentially,
it's for a variety of people. I think everybody will gain from different parts, because there's a whole lot of different language, like you said, the academic stuff and then the really casual dialogue. So everybody's going to understand a segment for sure, but I know some will definitely understand more, and it will be more of a personal thing for maybe mixed Māori or
I guess in terms of people not understanding it, we haven't really had anyone in the room yet that didn't understand it. Our rehearsal process has pretty much been everyone is Māori that's in the room, and if they're not, they're like something else of colour. someone mixed. So everyone in the room has been like able to tune in and understand where the process is going, but yeah, I'm not sure how it's gonna move. Like, we were joking about like inviting Don Brash to the opening night because there's a few Don Brash scenes. But yeah, I guess I feel quite protective over that, and I've really pushed that the opening night we don't really need to invite industry people that aren't Māori. Like, I don't really know why they'd need to be there unless they, you know, they can fucking buy a ticket. So yeah, I feel quite protective over the piece and also everyone involved. So I'm quite scared of holding that and making sure that everyone's safe.
Yeah, safety. And like you said, you've gone through this process and it's been quite healing, because this could be very healing for some people and also triggering. And even then you get Pākehā liberals. So yeah, space, taking up this space and using that space and making sure that that space is engaged with, in, I guess, a tika way, you might say. That's kind of what I mean, it was a very roundabout, messy interviewing, but that's sort of what I like to do, just jump around, and it's not a linear trajectory. My final kind of question was, what do you want people to take away from this? Which we have sort of talked about, but is there something that you specifically hope people will take away from it?
There's so many things that it's hard to choose. I can only really think about, so the people I know who are coming, like friends and family and myself, I think it's so different being on stage to like watching it. I hope they would have more of an understanding when you wouldn't jump to concluding that if someone can't speak Māori, then, you know, then they're not that Māori at all. Or if you don't know all of your cousins, then it's hardly your whānau, you know. It's also, there's just that huge barrier to jump over, to go home and to feel comfortable and feel like that's where you belong, because I know we're in the city now and we're doing city things, you know, and we're moving fast. There's not much, you know, Papatūānuku, there's not much land around us to kind of just like relax and feel like this is our home. But we can always escape and get there, and yeah, we will learn.